My name's Stephen Barron. I'm a lead program manager on the VMM team, and one of the main areas that I focus on is our new concept of services and application deployment inside of VMs and inside of operating systems that we're deploying. Let me get some questions out of the way so I'll know how to gear this talk. How many folks are familiar with VMM 2008 R2 and with VMM 2012 and with services in particular? Okay, so the hands go steadily down. So this is there's another talk that I'm giving on Friday that's going to go into the whole service lifecycle, and I'll talk about that briefly just so you know what I'll cover on Friday. Here we're going to focus strictly on creating a service template. So some of the content, particularly the first 5-10 minutes, I will repeat a bit on Friday, but I would recommend you go there because I'm going to talk mainly about SP1 features that we're lighting up, and again, this whole life cycle that we have around service management. And I'll talk about that just to give you a flavor of what's coming on Friday. So in VMM 2008 R2, I think almost every hand went up. Folks are familiar with that product. We had this concept of a VM template, right? And that really allowed you to repeatedly and reliably deploy standalone virtual machines. And if you thought about VM templates, they were really made up of three things, right? There was one or more virtual disks. There was a hardware profile, just like it sounds, defines the hardware characteristics of the virtual machine, and then a guest OS profile. And the guest OS profile really was, if you think about it, a set of things that you would normally do during Windows specialization, say via an unattend file, and we gave you a friendly GUI on top of that, and we abstracted out a number of very common properties that you would set on almost any machine you were deploying, such as, what's the computer name going to be? What's the initial local administrator password? Is the machine domain joined? And if so, what domain are you going to join it to? And so forth. And for properties that we didn't capture and expose to you, you could always attach your own custom unattend file. So if you needed to join a machine to a particular organizational unit, for example, you could attach an unattend to that guest OS profile, and we'd merge those settings at deployment time, right, and take care of that during provisioning. But if you think about the range of things you could do inside the guest during VM provisioning in 2008 R2, it was really limited to Windows OS specialization. And if you were brave, you could run a GUI run once script, or at least attempt to, right, via the guest OS profile. And when we stepped back and started thinking about VMM 2012, we looked at VM templates, and we came up with at least three, there's probably more, but at least three limitations of VM templates that we wanted to solve with 2012. First limitation is, well, they're only good for standalone single VMs. And that's great for some scenarios, but if you think about business services and distributed applications that are being delivered into the environment, usually they don't all exist on one machine, right? Usually you're deploying, say, a two-tier application. There's 2, 3, 4 web front ends and maybe a clustered SQL back end. Or a three-tier application, there's a set of front end servers, some middle-tier servers, and then a back end data server, probably running SQL Server. Very rarely do you find, especially in production, a single machine that has every component of a particular application. So that was limitation number one. Second limitation was around the range of in-guest configuration things that you can really do with a VM template. And again, that's really limited to OS specialization. But if you think about operating systems, especially something like Windows Server 2008 R2, if you deployed a base Server 2008 R2 operating system into a virtual machine and didn't configure any roles and features at a minimum, it's virtually impossible for that machine to be doing anything useful, right? It can't even be a file server. I mean, even that's a role that you have to enable. And VM templates, again, didn't give you any rich in-guest configuration. The third problem with VM templates is, for us, they were a fire-and-forget operation. And what I mean by that is, when you deployed an instance from a template, that instance maintained no relationship, no reference back to the template from which it was provisioned. And this causes a few issues over time. One is, you don't know 2 months later if the machines that were deployed from a particular template still match that template in terms of their hardware config, in terms of things inside the guest. And two, there's no real easy way to go ahead and update those machines. So what if you created a VM template for a standard web server in your environment, and you gave it a gig of memory, and you went and deployed 80 virtual machines, and it turns out that all of them really needed 2 gigs of memory, right? Now you're kind of stuck. You could either touch each machine individually, find a way to script it, but there's, again, no easy way to go and update all those machines, and there's certainly no easy way to figure out, well, which machines did I actually deploy from that template so I know which ones even have to be updated. So we came up with a new type of template in VMM 2012, and we call it a service template, and there's a number of new profiles that go along with this template type, and we used a service template construct to solve each of those three problems that I just described. So one, a service template will let you model one or more types of machines that you want to deploy. So if you had a typical three-tier application, you could model that in a service template and say, my web tier has this type of hardware configuration, this type of OS configuration, and these applications and scripts that get run inside of it. My mid-tier has a different hardware configuration, maybe a different OS config, and a different set of applications and scripts that are going to be installed. And finally, my data tier has yet a third type of hardware configuration. It's probably beefier. And it has different types of roles and features, and again, different applications that may be installed inside of it. So a service template for us is always the starting point for any service deployment. You can't deploy a service without a template. So in VMM 2008 R2, and even in 2012, there is a create virtual machine wizard that doesn't rely on a template. But for services, we always require that you have a template first. And the reason for that is the way we went about solving problem number three that I spoke about. Whenever you deploy a service instance from a template, we always maintain a relationship back to the template and the version of the template that that service was deployed from. And the way you go about making updates is you'll copy the template, make your changes, and then apply the updated template to one or more running instances. And we'll diff the two templates, figure out the changes, and just apply those changes. And again, in this session, I'm not going to talk about lifecycle or updating. We're really going to focus on what are the components of a service template and how do we go about creating them. And we'll probably spend at least half the session inside a demo system creating a number of templates. So in terms of the in-guest configuration that I spoke about, what we did with VMM 2012, and this is only applicable to services, so even though some of these artifacts will show up in a normal VM template, if you go to deploy a standalone VM from a virtual machine template that takes advantage of any in-guest features like role feature enablement or application deployment, we'll give you a warning saying that those things are going to be skipped. So those will only apply when you deploy from a service template. The good news is, if you have a VM template that has those artifacts, wrapping it in a service template is a single drag and drop operation and click a deploy button. So you're going to see that I'm going to start with making standard VM templates that folks can use as building blocks for a service template, and you'll see how easy it is to drag them in. Now, in terms of the in-guest configuration that we enable via services in VMM 2012, we do a number of things. One is we'll configure Windows Server 2008 R2 roles and features. We will have first-class support for certain application package types, and I'll tell you why I say first-class in just a moment. But those three application types are Microsoft Web Deploy for IIS-based applications, Server App V, which if you're familiar with Client App V, Server App V is a similar technology. It was actually a derivative of the Client App V technology, but it's geared more towards server workloads and server subsystems, and Server App V actually ships as a part of VMM. And finally, SQL data tier applications, so DAC packs, right? We have the ability to install DAC packs into SQL servers that either are virtual, physical, managed by VMM, or not managed by VMM. And we'll go through all of that. Now, the reason I call those three first-class application types is because we actually refresh those objects into our VMM library, and we understand the metadata around them. So if you're familiar with Web Deploy has this concept of a parameters file where you can specify that you want things configurable by an end user in terms of that package. So maybe a connection string setting, for example. We'll actually read in those parameters and allow you to modify them and allow you to specify them as configurable settings that can be entered by an end user at deployment time. Same thing for Server App V. They have a similar construct. They call it deployment config, but really it's all the properties that were captured about an application when it was sequenced. And we not only refresh those in, we allow you to modify them, give them different default values, or get end user values at deployment time. So the next question usually is, well, that's great, right? And I use some Web Deploy. I'm looking at Server App V, but I still use MSIs, or I have custom setup XEs, or I have custom scripts that I've written that go ahead and deploy my applications. What can I do? We have what we call generic command execution. And what this allows you to do is to inject into any VM at provisioning time or even during update time a set of payload and execute one or more arbitrary scripts. So if you had an MSI, you could put that into a folder in the VMM library. You could tell us that you want to execute a script against that folder. Maybe the script is a CMD file that just calls MSI exec, you know, slash QN slash I in the name of your MSI. And we'll go ahead and inject that payload into the VM and execute the script. And we'll give you really detailed control over how the script gets executed, both in terms of the security context that the script is going to run under and in terms of reboot and exit codes and what to do if you match standard error or standard out. And again, we'll walk through all that in the demos. In VMM 2012 RTM, we have support for Web Deploy 2.0, SQL DAC 1.1, and also ServRep V RTM, because ServRep V does ship as part of us. In our upcoming SP1 release, we'll include support for those as well, for the upgrade scenarios, and we'll introduce support for the new version of DAC for data tier apps, DAC V3, for WebDeploy 3.0, and also for ServRep V SP1, which again will ship as part of VMM SP1. So why would you use services? One, I would hope you would get some of that just from our first few minutes of discussion, but number one is, you know, you can manage those distributed applications, those multi-machine applications, as a unit. And by manage, I mean you can deploy them as a unit, stop them as a unit, start them, save state them, and delete them all as a unit. Instead of having to remember which virtual machines actually contribute to this application, and if I need to start them or stop them or delete the application, I have to go and find these disparate VMs in my environment. Number two is, you can mark certain tiers in your service template as a scale-out tier. And we include a new wizard as well as a new PowerShell commandlet to do scale-out based on demand. Now, to be clear, we don't have any default scale-out rules within VMM, but using something like Operations Manager, Orchestrator, some custom scheduled task you've written, you could go ahead and call scale-out, and you can scale out a tier of a service that you've marked as a scale-out tier. Finally, and probably most important, really, is this composability aspect that you get around services. And what I mean by that is, when we spoke to customers in the past, we find that lots of customers maintain lots of different sysprepped images. So they may have a sysprepped image for an IIS server, and a sysprepped image for a BizTalk server, and a sysprepped image for a file server, and the list goes on and on. Number one, that's a lot of images to maintain. And if you think about the maintenance headache that goes along with that, it's pretty substantial. So if you have an image that defines your standard IIS server and it's been sysprepped, and you have to make a change to that image, you have to rehydrate it, make your changes, re-sysprep it, and then make sure that people are using the right version of the image. But if you think about what we've done with service templates, it's very possible that you could have a single OS image, right? A single base server 2008 R2 image, no roles and features configured within it, no custom configuration, no applications, define all of your customizations within the confines of the service template. What roles and features does this particular type of workload need, which applications, which configuration scripts, and so forth. And templates, as you'll recall from VMM 2008 R2, exist only in our database as metadata. So A, they're very lightweight, they're very small, they consume very little storage, and B, they're much easier to modify than the process of rehydrating and redoing a disk and resysprepping it. I won't talk about it much in this talk, but I'll talk on Friday. For folks that might be wondering, well, that was great, but in 2008 R2, the only way I could get my templates back if one got deleted was by restoring the database. We do have import and export functionality in VMM 2012 for VM templates and service templates so that you can back them up as on a regular basis out to the file system. So I mentioned earlier, you always start by creating a service template because you cannot deploy a service without having a service template from which you're going to deploy. It's always a starting point. We introduced a new designer in VMM 2012 to allow you to easily model services and save those service templates. And what you're going to do when you're creating a service template is define machines and tiers of machines as well as their connectivity. Connectivity to specific logical networks, connectivity to load balancers. And if you think about the design time aspect of a service, at that time when you're actually constructing the service or authoring it, you don't really have information like, well, which exact hosts are instances of this service going to go to? Or which exact load balancer is this tier of a service going to be behind? So what you're really doing is describing the requirements of each tier of your service, and then our intelligent placement algorithm at deployment time will figure out, based on the target to which you're deploying, whether it be a host group or a private cloud in VMM, does that cloud or that host group have access to all the resources required by all the tiers of that service? And if it doesn't, then we'll give you pretty sensible error messages as to, oh, we couldn't find a load balancer that met the requirements of this tier, or you specified that the VMs in this tier need to be highly available, but there's no cluster in this cloud, and so forth. Again, deployed services, when you deploy an instance of a service, it's always linked back to the template from which you deployed it from. And when you deploy an instance from a template, that template becomes read-only, as long as there's one or more running instances that have that reference. And the reason is, A, you don't want to modify that template because we wouldn't automatically go ahead and push changes out. B, you always know that that template matches, or the guests, the service instances deployed from that template should match that template because the template is unmodifiable. Now, if you've deleted all the service instances that reference a particular service template, sure, you can delete it. And again, the way you go about updating those services is by copying the template it currently points to, making your changes, and then applying the updated template to one or more instances. So in VMM 2008 R2, in our library, we supported a number of artifacts for you to drop in there that we would refresh in, right? So you could drop in things like VHDs, unattend files, PowerShell scripts, and so forth. And in 2012, we introduced support for a number of new artifacts that you can drop in, like web deploy packages and server app B packages. But we also introduced an artifact that we call a custom resource. And a custom resource is simply a folder that you create in any VMM library share that ends in .cr, so .custom resource. And while we won't refresh in all the individual files that may be in that folder, we do refresh in the fact that that folder is available in the library. And that's how you can go ahead and inject arbitrary payload and execute custom scripts inside of a VM. You tell us which script resource package, which custom resource you want us to inject in the VM, and tell us which script you want us to execute. We include some custom resources by default. So since we have support for web deploy and server app V, if you're deploying a web deploy package to a virtual machine or a server app V package, clearly you need either the web deploy framework or the server app V agent on that machine. So we include default custom resources along with install scripts to make it really easy to get web deploy or server app V deployed out into the environment. By using custom resources and dropping them into the VMM library, you can take advantage of generic command execution. And again, this is going to allow you to execute custom scripts and deliver arbitrary payload inside of a VM. Scripts can be, in 2012 RTM, when you execute a script, the script to us really is a black box, right? We don't know what exactly the script is doing. So if for whatever reason that script fails at deployment time or at servicing time, you always have the option to restart the VMM job, of course, to continue the deployment, but we will not re-execute the script. Because since we don't know what the script is doing, we assume that it's unsafe to re-execute it. In SP1, we'll allow you to mark scripts as idempotent. And what that means is, if that script should fail, and the VMM job fails because that script failed, when you restart the job, if you mark the script this way, we will re-execute the script. So if you have a script that you know it's safe to re-execute if it fails, maybe you had a network connectivity issue at deployment time, you can have us restart that script for you in SP1. Finally, we have multiple entry points for GCEs, so you're not limited to just one script that you can execute. We give you the ability to execute scripts pre-install of any application, post-install of any application, and then pre and post all applications that are being installed. And we give you some additional points when you're updating services where you can add custom scripts. SQL profiles. SQL 2008 R2 introduced a new ability to create a sysprepped instance of SQL. And you do this by going through the normal SQL install, choosing the advanced option, and then there's an option to prepare an instance of SQL. And after you're done with that, you can then sysprep the disk. And now you have a sysprepped instance of SQL that needs to be completed after Windows specialization has occurred. So to take advantage of that functionality that the SQL team introduced, we created a new type of profile called a SQL profile. So if you've created a VHD that has a prepared instance of SQL, you can use our SQL profile to complete that installation of SQL at the VM provisioning time. And essentially what happens is, at deployment time, when that machine's done provisioned, it's actually a fully functioning SQL server ready to go, right? It doesn't require any other manual intervention on your part. And we'll allow you to configure things like, what's the instance name going to be? And we also support multiple instances. So if you have two or three sysprepped instances on a SQL server, you can configure us in such a way that when that SQL server is done being provisioned, you have three instances ready to go. We'll let you set things like the authentication mode. So is it going to be in Windows authentication mode or SQL mixed mode? And if it's in mixed mode, what's the SA password going to be? And do you want things like TCP/IP and or named pipes enabled? Similar to the guest OS profile with the unattend file, if we haven't put in all the things that you want to specialize about a SQL server, we'll let you attach your own custom SQL configuration INI. And then we'll go ahead and do the same thing. We'll merge those settings with the settings that you specified in the SQL profile, and we'll apply those at provisioning time. What we heard from customers when we talked about SQL databases in particular was, it's great that you guys can provision SQL servers, and it's great that you can deploy databases, but usually when I'm deploying applications into my environment, I don't actually give each application its own SQL server, right? More likely, I have some existing SQL cluster in the environment that's really big, and it hosts tens, if not hundreds, of databases for a number of applications. So in 2012 RTM, we also include an object type that we call an application host. And we have one type of application host in SQL in VMM 2012 RTM, and that's a SQL Server app host. What that allows you to do is create a profile that consists only of SQL data tier applications, so DAC packs, and optionally T-SQL scripts that you want us to execute. And you can use that profile in the context of a service template to deploy those databases and execute those scripts against any SQL Server in your environment, whether it be physical, virtual, clustered, managed by VMM, or not managed by VMM. In SP1, we're introducing a new type of application host called a web application host. And this will allow you to deploy web deploy applications out to existing IIS servers in your environment, whether they're standalone, farm-based, physical, virtual, managed by VMM or not. And I'll walk you through what a service template like that looks like. Finally, configurable service settings. So a service template is, you can think about it like a recipe for deploying a particular workload, right, or a particular distributed application, or a particular type of infrastructure server, right, a service template for an IIS server, a service template for a DHCP server, and so forth. But what happens is, especially for a distributed app or a regular application, I want to take that service template and I want to be able to deploy multiple instances of that service into multiple environments, such as dev, QA, staging, and production. But if you think about an application, a real simple one, say a two-tier app with an IIS site, a web application, and a SQL database, there's a connection string between those two, right? And I need to be able to specialize that at deployment time because I want to use that one template to deploy multiple instances so that I know that all those instances are created in the same way, right? The exact same recipe is being followed, and I don't have the works in dev, doesn't work in QA, or works in prod, doesn't work on my machine, right? Or notably, the reverse usually, works on my machine, doesn't work in prod. So what we'll allow you to do throughout the service template model is create these variables that we call configurable service settings. And the way you create them is you use an at symbol, give a friendly variable name that you decide on, such as SQL Server or SQL Space User or SQL Space Password, and end that in an at symbol. And at deployment time, we'll prompt the end user who's deploying that instance of the service for the values of those settings. And we'll store the values of those settings for the lifetime of the service so that when they go ahead and update the service, you know, 3 weeks later, we don't have to ask them for the same values again. This allows you to take that single service template, deploy multiple instances, but specialize each of those deployments such that they're going to work in the environment to which you're deploying. Service settings also have properties. So once you've defined these service settings throughout the model, you can mark them as mandatory or optional, as encrypted or not, and you can even give a default value. So maybe you have a web application that has a timeout setting. And in QA, maybe you bump that timeout setting up to 360. And in production, you bump it down to 120. You could give someone a sensible default value of something like 240 and still allow them to override that at deployment time. And VMM includes a few predefined service settings, such as at computer name at. So if you were executing a custom script inside of a machine and it needed to know the machine name as a parameter, for example, you could pass in the at computer name at configurable service setting, and we'll automatically take care of populating that value. We're not going to ask the end user for that. Clearly, we know the computer name because we're the ones provisioning that machine. I'm going to skip over this slide. This briefly just walks through the service template components. So you'll have access to the deck. So this is a good reference. The green ones that start out here are the ones we had in VMM 2008 R2. We had a VM template that consisted of VHD's hardware profile and a guest OS profile. We added to that a computer tier. That's housed in a new template type that we call the service template. We added an application profile that allows you to define, again, applications you want deployed inside the guest. An application profile can have more than one application deployment. So you could have a single app profile that has 3 web deploy packages, 2 server app V packages, 6 data tier applications, and 4 scripts. That's the scripting. Those, again, optional, but those are great extensibility points. We added roles and features to the guest OS profile. We added the SQL profile that I spoke about for completing prepared instances of SQL. That SQL profile has one or more SQL deployments. We also have great integration with load balancers, so we're not going to cover that. I think in the networking talk that's coming up later this week, there will be a discussion of load balancer integration. But we have built-in support for Microsoft NLB, and then we have downloadable providers that are made available by Citrix for NetScaler devices, and F5 for their big IP devices. And this allows you to, when you're deploying a service, tell us that this tier is behind a load balancer. Tell us the characteristics of the load balancer that you want, or the VIP that you want created, such as does it require affinity or not? And if it does, what's the persistence mechanism? Is it, you know, cookie-based or round-robin or cookie-based or source IP-based? And what's the load balancing algorithm? Is it round-robin, fastest response time, you know, least connections and so forth? And we'll take care of not only creating that VIP at deployment time and putting the members in, but also configuring it. And then during updates, we'll take care of only taking out, you know, certain members to do an update, putting those instances back in, and then moving on to the next members. And we're going to go more into depth on that in Friday's discussion. The application host profile, again, used for deploying in 2012 RTM SQL databases and executing T-SQL scripts against arbitrary SQL servers. And in 2012 SP1, a web deploy, or an IIS-based application host. So now we're going to switch over to my demo system. And I'll start real briefly going through the library just so you can see the new artifacts that will refresh in the library. Clearly, we did VHDs in 2008 R2. These are custom resources. So this, again, I mentioned. These are just folders that you drop into a VMM library share and prepend it with or append it with a .cr extension. I spoke about the default ones that we include just so you can see what a custom resource looks like. You'll see here's my default VMM library share. And we've included these four custom resources by default. And again, they're just folders that end in .cr. So we included one custom resource for server app V and web deploy x86, x64. So four default custom resources. And if I look inside, like the server app V custom resource, you'll see there's a number of files inside of there. There's a couple CMD files. These we provide. These are install for the SAV agent is right here, or installing the server app V sequencer. And then, of course, all the files that we need. So here's the server app V PowerShell commandlets MSI. This is the server app V agent. And again, if I use this custom resource in a service template, this folder is going to get injected inside the VM. We're going to execute whatever script. Maybe I told it to execute install sav.cmd. And then we're going to clean up that payload directory when we're done executing the executing the script. So I have a number of custom resources in my library. These are server app V packages that I've dropped into the library. And when I mentioned server app V and web deploy being first class application types, what I mean by that is for this blog engine application, for example, you can see there's a number of application settings that we've refreshed in. And when I drop this application package into a profile, I can customize any of these settings or I can mark them as configurable settings that I want end user input for. One other thing I should have mentioned right at the beginning of the talk, I am perfectly happy to take questions as we're going. If you want to save them to the end, that's okay. But if anyone has any questions as we're going through, just raise your hand and we'll get those addressed. Then these are SQL DAC packs, so data tier applications that have been refreshed in. And then finally, a number of web deploy packages. And similar to server app V, these web deploy packages, if they have parameters, we're going to show them to you down here. So this web deploy package has a parameter of connection string. So now we're going to start by creating some service templates, but I'm not going to start with the service template designer. Because if you think about VM templates, right, we said there are a number of building blocks for VM templates. VHDs, hardware profiles, guest OS profiles. Well, service templates have those same building blocks and more, like application profiles and scripts and so forth, but VM templates themselves can be great building blocks for service templates. And again, a service template doesn't have to be a 2, 3, 4 tier complex application. It could be for IT pros, if you're deploying lots of IIS servers, right, and doing them somewhat automated, somewhat manual, a service template is a great solution for deploying IIS servers. If you think back about the earlier example I gave when we were talking about VM templates and VM instances having no relationship, imagine if you used a service template to define a standard IIS server in your environment, and you enabled a bunch of roles and features on that service template, and you went out and deployed 80 instances of web servers into the environment. And it turns out that you didn't enable the IIS6 management compatibility feature, for example, and almost all your applications require it. Now you have a choice, right? You could either log into 80 machines and enable that feature. You could maybe tell people who deployed the machines, well, you're local admins, you go ahead and enable the feature. Or maybe you could find a way to script the install of that feature across 80 machines. But with a service template, if you've deployed all those instances from a single service template, you can go ahead and copy the template, check that you want IIS6 management compatibility enabled, Now apply that updated template to one or all 80 of those running instances. And if it's something that's non-intrusive, like that feature that doesn't require a reboot, maybe you just say, go ahead and do it right now. And we'll go through and enable that feature on all 80 instances, or, you know, whichever ones you've applied that updated template to. Or if it's something intrusive, like maybe message queuing that requires a reboot, you can tell us to defer the changes, and then you can come back during a maintenance window and hit the apply button. But you can see what all the diffs are going to be ahead of time. And that makes it really easy to go through and update not only what your base IIS server looks like, but when you're making those modifications, make sure that you're applying them to all the existing servers that happen to be in the environment. So before we create a service template, I'm going to create a couple building blocks. The first one I'm going to do is I'm going to create what is a standard Windows Server 2008 R2 IIS server in my environment. So I'm going through the normal create VM template wizard. This will look very similar to VMM 2008 R2 with a couple differences that I'll point out as we're going along. So first I choose a disk, and I have a Server 2008 R2 SP1 VHD in my library. It has no roles and features enabled and no configuration applied to it. I give the template a name, so I'm going to call this standard Server 2008 R2 IIS. And my hardware config for my IIS servers is, I'll just say, a gig of memory. And actually, what I'm going to do also is connect up a network adapter while I'm sitting here on the hardware page. So I'm going to remove the legacy adapter, add a synthetic network adapter, and I'm going to say that it's connected to my CORP logical network. Now I get to my OS specialization page, and we support computer name patterns in VMM 2012 as well. So maybe I want all of servers that are provisioned from this template to be called something like Windows IIS 0001, 0002, 0003, and so forth. So I prepend the computer name with these hash symbols. And VMM is going to automatically generate names for me and keep track of the names that it's not only dished out, but names that it's reclaimed through VM deletion. Now, to be clear, we are not going to go out and query Active Directory. So if someone went out and deployed a physical machine or deployed a machine outside of us that had the name Windows IIS 0001, we're not going to check Active Directory, and you're going to have a conflict at deployment time. So the best practice, of course, is make sure that the names that we generate are available in the environment, or use us to do all of your provisioning, and then we will keep track of those names. So I'm going to put that pattern in, and then I can specify the initial local admin password. Now, VMM 2012, for those of you that are familiar with it, has this new concept of run-as accounts, where I can create secure run-as accounts in VMM where I provide a username and password, and then I can delegate those run-as accounts for people to use. So maybe I don't have rights to join a machine to the domain, but my admin's given me access to a run-as account that they've created that has the rights to join the machine to the domain. So I can leverage the account, but I don't actually know the credentials. Now, for my initial admin password, since I want other people to be able to use this as a building block of their templates, I don't want to hard code a password in, because clearly I don't want all the machines in my environment to have the same local admin password, and the people that are using this building block probably don't want everyone else knowing what the initial local admin password is for their devices. So what I can do is I can say I want someone to use a run-as account when we're provisioning this device to specify what that initial local admin password is. And then it wouldn't make much sense for me to hard code the run-as account either, because then, again, everyone is using the same run-as account for their local admin password. So I have an option to use a configurable service setting. And remember, these are variables that I can declare that end users are going to get prompted for at deployment time so that they're customizing their deployment of a service template per their requirements. And again, all I do is type an at symbol, give it a friendly name, so any name that I want. I'm just going to call this local admin account, and I end it with an at symbol. And then when I drop this into a service template, we're going to figure out all the settings that are available for that template. I also want, since it's an IIS server, I know that I need a number of roles and features enabled. So I'm going to go ahead and select just a very basic set. I'll take the web server IIS role. And I'll take the management tools, and I always want the IIS management console on there. And I want ASP.NET. And then for features, I'm going to have .NET 3.5.1 automatically enabled for me. And this defines for me what looks like a very standard IIS server in my environment. Finally, I want the machines to be domain joined, but maybe, like lots of customers, my machines or my environments actually have different domains. So dev is one domain and production is another domain. Now, if I hard code a domain in here, people aren't going to be able to modify that later on, at least not easily, in their template. So again, even in the domain field, I can say, well, I want that to be a setting. So I'm just going to put at domain at, and now I'm going to prompt the end user at deployment time for which domain are this particular IIS server, which domain is it going into? And similarly, to join the domain, I'm going to have them use a runAS account, and I'm going to ask them to tell me which runAS account are you using that has permissions to join machines to this particular domain. So this I'm just going to call domain join account, but I'm going to make sure to spell it the way I want it spelled. And then, of course, I could attach a custom answer file if I want. I have one that goes ahead and enables a remote desktop on the machines by default, right? So I'm going to go ahead and attach that because most people actually like RDP enabled on their devices after they provision them. Now, since I want people to use this as a base IIS server template, and since even myself, I may use this to deploy IIS servers, I'm not going to actually add any applications here. And I'll rely on people saying, I need a standard IIS server, and allow them to then customize their own service template and add their own applications. Similarly, this is not a SQL server, so I'm not going to configure a SQL deployment. So I get to my summary page, and I can now go ahead and create that VM template. And it's going to pop up here in just a second. And I'm going to create a second VM template. And this one I'm going to use to define a standard SQL server in my environment. So again, we're going to walk through the same wizard. It's going to be very similar. But the first thing you're going to notice is I'm not going to choose that Windows 2008 R2 SP1 disk. I'm going to choose a disk that I prepared that has a prepared instance of SQL. So I have one for SQL 2008 R2 and one for 2012. Now again, to be clear about the differences in RTM and SP1, in VMM 2012 RTM, we have support for completing prepared instances of SQL 2008 R2. In VMM 2012 SP1, we'll retain that support and we'll also include support for completing prepared instances of SQL 2012. So I'm going to choose this 2008 R2 disk, and I'm going to give it a name, which is going to be standard 2008 R2 SQL Server. And the hardware for my SQL servers is generally a little beefier than the hardware for my web servers. In this case, I'm not going to make it much beefier, but I'll give it 2 gigs of memory. And I'm going to do the same thing on the network adapter. I'm going to remove the legacy default one, and I'm going to add a synthetic network adapter, and then I'm going to go ahead and connect it to the Corp logical network. Now, my OS page, I'm going to give this a different computer name pattern because I don't want my SQL servers called, you know, the SB web pound, pound, pound. So I'm going to call these 2008 R2 SQL pound, 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 pound. And the admin password, I'm going to do the exact same thing. And what I want you to notice is on this template, I'm actually going to use the same variable name that I used for my other template. And when we get to constructing the service template, you're going to see why I did this. And the same thing for domain. I want people to be able to specify at deployment time which domain they want these machines joined to. I'm going to use the same name. I'm going to do the same thing for the runAS account to join the domain. And that's why I wanted to make sure I spelled it correctly. And I won't attach the answer file for this one. Again, no applications are going to be configured here. But because I have this prepared instance of SQL, I am going to add a SQL Server deployment so that I can go ahead and complete that installation. So the first thing I do is I can just give it a friendly name. I'm just going to call this SQL deployment. And this field is what do I want the instance name to be after SQL has been configured. So if I left it blank, we would use the default of MS SQL Server. But if I needed a named instance, that's where I would fill in here. I'll actually be explicit about it and say I want it to be called MS SQL Server. Now, when you go through and create a prepared installation of SQL, one of the things they ask you during that preparation phase is, what is the instance ID that you're preparing, right? So what is that instance that is the sysprepped instance? So when I created my VHD and I prepared my instance of SQL, I called the prepared instance sysprep SQL. So I have to put that in there so that VMM knows which instance this deployment is specializing. And that goes back to the fact when I spoke earlier that you could prepare an instance of prepare an image of SQL that has three sysprepped instances, because you need three instances on all your SQL servers, and you could add multiple SQL deployments here and tell us which ones to specialize. And they could be specialized differently, right? One could be in Windows mode, one could be in mixed mode, and so forth. I only have a single instance inside of mine. I could give it a product key if I needed to, and I also need to provide an installation account, so which account is going to run the installation. Now, I'm just going to choose local system here, but on the next page in configuration, to complete the installation of a prepared instance of SQL, in SQL 2008 R2, they actually require the SQL setup media in order to complete the installation. Now, I've actually sysprepped that media into my VHD in a directory called c:\sqlEval. But you could just keep it on a network share. And if you kept it on a network share, right, you would just point your media source to wherever that media installation is available. Now, if you did that, though, one thing that you're going to have to remember is on this page, you're going to have to make sure that the installation run as account is a domain account or an account that has access to get to that network share, or else the completion is going to fail. Because SQL is going to require that media, we're going to be executing under this account, and if that account doesn't have access to get to the media, the preparation or the completion is going to fail. So since mine is baked into the VHD, I can just use local system, and I tell it where the media source is. In this case, it's on my C drive. And then I can add who do I want the initial SQL admins to be. So I'll just add my own account for this one. And then again, I can decide, do I want that question?
Can you just attach the SQL source in a separate VHD?
I'm sorry?
Could you attach the SQL source in a separate VHD?
To the same VM?
Yeah.
You could, but you'd have to know which drive letter that VHD is going to get, right? Because you're going to have to reference a drive letter, and chances are you may always get D, but maybe one time you get E and it doesn't work. So network share is what a lot of customers are using, or they're baking it into the VHD. The nice thing about baking it into the VHD also is now you have access to it if you needed to install or remove an additional feature later. But network share is what lots of customers are using right now. And the question was, could I simply put the install media on a separate VHD and attach it to the VM? And again, there's probably challenges associated with that, particularly around drive naming or letter naming for that drive. Again, you can specify Windows or SQL auth mode, and if you specify mixed mode here, then we're going to ask you for a run-as account that defines what the SA credentials are, because that's required by SQL. And I'm going to also enable TCP/IP. And finally, I can configure the identities for the core SQL service accounts. So in my case, I'm just going to have them run under system. The first two are required entries. So SQL Server Service and the Agent Service. Reporting Services is optional. So that's if you've sysprepped in reporting services. Question? So the question was analysis services. SQL 2008 R2 doesn't support analysis services for sysprep. So we only support the features via the SQL profile that they support. And those are DB Engine, full text search, integration services, and reporting services. So if you need to do installs of analysis services, you have a couple options. One is you could still use the SQL profile for that prepared instance, and then you could use a post-install custom script to go ahead and do an install of analysis services, or you could forget the SQL profile and just do an unattended install via the script, so where you're doing the whole install via script. They also don't support sysprepping in Management Studio. So one of the things I almost always do is I have a post-install script that installs Management Studio for me as part of this deployment, and I'll go ahead and do that when I use a service template for this to show you how to add that. And I don't have reporting services baked in, so I'm not going to provide that account. And now I have two VM templates, right? And again, to be clear, if I deployed a standalone virtual machine from this template, so if I right-click this template and said create virtual machine, I'm not going to get any role-in features, and my SQL server is not going to be completed. The way I do that is I drop these into a service template. So what I'll do is I'll switch over to my service template designer. I'm going to say create service template. And I'm going to use these two servers in a single service template, because lots of times my developers need access to a web server and a SQL server, right, for their development activities. So I want to give them a really simple configuration that's going to give them a standard IIS server and a standard SQL server so that I know that they're developing against standard configurations in my environment. And also, they don't have to think about roles and features. They're able to just deploy an instance of this service, and when that service is done provisioned, they have at their disposal a web server, SQL server combination. I'm going to start with a blank service template. We include some predefined patterns for single machine, two-tier, and three-tier. And I'll call this standard web dev environment. And I can give it a release, and I'll call this 1.0. So now I have a service template. Right? I'm just going to drag this guy up a little bit. And you'll notice that my VM templates show up here on the left, right, as building blocks. If I didn't have a VM template or I needed to create something new, I could just add a new machine tier here. Essentially, that's going to walk me through the VM template creation wizard to create a new service tier. But I'm just going to take my IIS template that I just created and drop it in here. And I'm going to take my SQL template that I just created, and I'm going to drop it in here. And maybe my developers write their applications in such a way that we have lots of problems sometimes when they wind up being behind a load balancer, right? So they don't handle load balancing well, or we run into, you know, typical issues whenever we put those in production because they're developing on a single machine. If I wanted to and I had the capacity, I could say that this tier, for example, is going to be a scale-out tier, and it's going to start with a default instance count of 2. And I could even wire it up behind something like Microsoft NLB so that anytime someone deployed an instance of this service, they would start with 2 web servers and 1 SQL server. But if I wanted them to have a smaller environment, I could set the default instance count at 1 and give them a maximum instance count of 2 and allow them to, you know, scale it out if they needed to. So maybe for some environments, they only need 1 web server, 1 SQL, and for others, they need 2 web servers and 1 SQL server. I can also specify deployment orders, and I'm going to get to that when I add applications to this template. But what I showed you right now was you made 2 VM templates, right? Or I made 2 VM templates. Everyone's familiar with VM templates. And all I did was drag them into the service designer. If I just wanted a standard IIS server, I would have just dragged the first one, and I'm done. I just click save, or I click configure deployment, right? And I'm finished. So a service template can be as simple as a standalone VM template, but you're getting the additional benefits of not only that relationship between the instance and the template, but also that rich in-guest configuration for roles and features, applications, and so forth. So I'm going to go ahead and save this, right? So now I have a standard web dev environment that my developers, my end users, can go ahead and use. And what that's going to give them is a base IIS server and a base SQL server. But what's really powerful is now what I could do is I could take that standard web dev environment template here, right? And say I had access to this as an author, right? Where I told people, this is what I want you to use when you're authoring your service templates with your application. So I know the IIS and SQL are configured in the same way every time. Now I have a copy of that template. I can go ahead and open that copy up in the designer. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give this service template itself a different name, right? And I'm going to call it, well, this is my blog engine web service, right? And I'll give it a release of 1.0. So I'm starting with that service template, but giving it a different name, so now I'm having my own lineage of this template. But I'm starting out, again, with the standard IIS and SQL servers that have been configured for my environment. So now on the SQL server, well, I'll start out in the web tier, actually. I'm going to go to the properties of that tier. And I have all the same properties that were defined for me, right, by the admin or by the initial author of this. But I'm going to go ahead and add some applications. So I'm going to say I want to create some new application settings. And first thing I'm going to do is I've packaged up Blog Engine as a server app v package. I also have a web deploy package for it. So I've added, if you didn't see that, virtual application. So I'm going to give it a friendly name here. And I'm just going to call it Blog Engine site, and then I browse for a server app v package in the library. And I have a few different Blog Engine ones. I'm going to say this is Blog Engine 2.0 is the version of the package I'm going to use. And because it's a server app v package, I need to make sure that the server app v agent is on that machine. So before any application has been installed, I want to execute a script. And it's going to be a pre-install script. Right? If I wanted to execute it after applications were installed, I could make it a post-install script. This is going to be a pre-install script. The executable that I'm going to run is CMD. And I'm going to run it quietly and suppress output because I need these things to run silently and in an unattended fashion. And if you remember that default resource that I showed you earlier, it had a CMD file called installsav.cmd that VMM provided. And that was in that server app v64 directory. So I've browsed to my script resource package. Remember, it had a number of files in there. And what this means is we're going to inject the contents of that folder inside the VM. We're going to run cmd /q /c installsav cmd. And I wanted it to execute under local system. But if I needed it to execute under a local account or an admin, I could choose any run as account I have access to or create a new one. I can give it a timeout. And I'll say, well, this always completes in less than 15 minutes. And then I have really advanced control over how that script operates. So if I need to troubleshoot something that goes wrong with that script, for example, I can go ahead and say, well, I want to write the standard output or standard error stream out to some file inside the VM. So I'll write my standard out to some text file, and I'll write my standard error to some text file. Just so that if it fails, I have a pretty easy to consume record of what happened. And then I can decide if I want to match anything that comes back in standard out or standard error. And if I do match it, what do I want to do? Do I want to fail the whole job, or do I just want to warn, you know, give me a warning in the VMM job trail, but continue along with the rest of the deployment? And I can also match exit codes. And then I can also configure a restart policy. So I could say, I always need to restart the machine after this script is finished, or just restart if you see one of these exit codes. And I could supply my own exit code if I wanted to. So now I've added a pre-install script for that package, and I've added the package itself. So now I have my web tier is almost done. The other thing I want, actually, yeah, my web tier is done. So now I'm going to come, oh, and we also have you mark application profiles as which operating systems are they compatible with. So if you create standalone app profiles as building blocks, and someone drags one that you've marked compatible with 2008 R2, but they drag it onto a tier template that's marked Windows Server 2012, we'll be able to give them that nice warning. And we'll also always bold the operating system selected in the current template. So I'm just going to say it's compatible with that one. Click OK. And now I'm saving my web tier. And you'll notice that the package will show up there. And I'm going to move on to my SQL tier. So I'm going to access the properties of my SQL tier. Now I'm going to leave everything the same. But I am going to add some applications, right? So I still have my SQL config that was defined in that template. So I'm going to say I actually want to create some new application settings. This time I'll mark the compatible OS up front so we don't get that warning. And now I'm going to add a SQL Server data tier application. And again, I get to give it a friendly name. I'm just going to call this Blog Engine Database. And I get to browse my VMM library for packages that I have access to. So there's my Blog Engine DAC pack. And I get to specify when this gets deployed, what do I want that database to actually be called? Now, we'll pick out the default. As you see, I didn't have to type in Blog Engine. We read the DAC manifest and figured out, oh, when it was exported, it was called Blog Engine. But if I needed to call it something else, I could change that here. And then I need to be made aware of, how am I deploying that DAC package, right? Am I using Windows auth mode with SQL or SQL auth mode? So what's the account permissions that I'm using, the security context, to deploy that DAC pack? So I'm just going to say I'm using SQL Server auth, and I'm going to give it this SQL account that I have access to. And then when we uninstall this DAC later on, maybe you have to remove it from the deployment. Maybe you need to remove it and replace it with a different one. What do you want us to do to the physical database file when we remove that DAC? Do you want us to just detach the database? Do you want us to make it unmanaged? That just means unregister as a data tier application. Or do you want us to actually drop it, right? Delete that physical file. I'm going to drop mine. And then for upgrade of databases, if you're familiar with DAC, DAC packs are the schema and the model of your database, right? They don't contain any data. But what's great about DAC packs is you can deploy a DAC pack, get your data seeded any way you want, either by doing an import, by executing a SQL script, which is what I'm going to do in just a moment, and I'll show you what that looks like. But then maybe my developer has a new version of that DAC pack later that introduces some new tables. Or maybe it reduces a table by removing a column. I have really granular control in the advanced settings page here over what do I want to do during the upgrade cycle, right? So when I apply an updated version of this DAC, if a column was dropped, right, that's going to result in data loss. So I can tell VMM, yeah, go ahead, which means I'm really telling the DAC framework, go ahead and ignore any data loss or ignore any out-of-band changes, right? These are just advanced options that are made available by DAC itself. So I'm just going to leave everything at the default. Click OK. And then I'm going to attach a SQL script. Because as I just mentioned, DAC packs don't include data by default, right? So you have to find a way to get your data into a DAC pack. So I'm going to execute a script against this database that's going to pre-populate it with a set of data that's specific to my application. And it wouldn't make sense to execute it as a pre-install because the database isn't going to be there in the pre-install phase. But if you need to do something to SQL Server itself in preparation of that database, you could go ahead and execute one or more T-SQL scripts in the pre-install phase. I'm going to say that I want to execute it post-install. So after the DAC's been installed, I want to execute it, and I want to execute it against this database. And again, credentials for executing that script, right, which could be different than the credentials that are used to deploy that database. And I have this script that's called blog engine custom setup.sql. And I'm going to show you what that looks like in a minute. Actually, I'm going to show you right now so you can see these parameters. So I'm just going to open it in Notepad because I really just want you to see. I'm going to populate a bunch of data, but what I'm also doing is I'm taking two parameters to this SQL script, a username and a password. And I'm taking those parameters so that when I create that database, that script that I'm executing afterwards is going to create that SQL user if it doesn't exist and grant it the appropriate permissions to that particular database. So you can see the parameters that my SQL script takes are called blogEngine_username and blogEngine_password. So I'm going to go back into my VMM UI, and I'm going to say, yes, I want to pass in parameters. So the first one was blogEngine_username equals, and I'm going to use a configurable service setting here. What that means is I could have five different people deploy five instances of this template, and they can each specify their own unique SQL user and SQL password, and this script is going to take care of not only creating that user account, but granting it rights to their database and only their database. So I'm going to call this one SQL space user, if I can find my L key. And the second parameter you'll remember was blog engine password. And I'll call that after I get my double quotes. SQL password. I can specify a log file path if I want to log the output of executing that SQL script. And again, I need a deployment account. So which account is going to be used to execute this particular SQL scripts? And you'll notice we also have a deployment order. So I can execute multiple scripts of any particular type. If I needed to execute two pre-install and four post-install scripts, I have that control available to me. Am I going to?
Are you going to show it to us or not?
Yeah, I will show.
Since you wrote blog engine with a double N instead of one N.
In the script? Yeah, we're not going to actually finish the deployment, but I am going to configure the deployment. So, good catch, though. So now you'll remember in my VM template, and in addition in my service template, I defined a bunch of these settings. Right, these configurable service settings that I want end user input for. So now, where do they show up? Well, if I just click the service template itself, I can go to properties, and I have a tab for all the service settings that are defined within that template. And you'll notice that even though I use domain join account and local admin account and domain in multiple places, they only show up one time, right? But I can drill in and I can see all the places they're used within the model. So I can see that this is used in both tiers. And I can see that SQL password, for example, is only used in one tier, right? It's only used in that data tier. And this is where I can say, Well, domain, yeah. People are going to have to give me a value for domain before I'm going to allow them to deploy, right? Because it doesn't make any sense for them not to. We know the deployment's going to fail. Same thing for domain join account. It's mandatory. Local admin account, yeah. Everyone's going to need to have that local admin password. That's mandatory as well. And I could mark them encrypted if I needed to as well. And SQL password, I'll say, yep, needs a value. And SQL user also. So all of these are going to be mandatory. Whoops. Again, I could optionally encrypt them, or I could provide a default value if I wanted to as well. So now all my service settings are in place. They have the right properties that I want. My service template's all ready to go. It's got some applications. Now when I go ahead to configure deployment, I'm going to be asked for what's the name of this particular service. So I'll call this TechEd Blog. And where do I want to deploy it to? I don't think I've created any clouds in my environment. If I did create private clouds, and if I was an SSU, I would only see private clouds. I'm just going to choose to deploy it to my production host group. Now what's happening is our intelligent placement algorithm is figuring out all the requirements of this particular of all the VMs in this service and figuring out can they be placed or not. So the first thing you'll notice is the computer name patterns. So we generated computer names here. Windows IIS 0001 and 2008 R2 SQL 0001. And also, here's all my configurable service settings. The reason there's X's there is they're mandatory. So now I, deploying this instance of Blog Engine, can say, well, this one is going to go into RedmondCorpMicrosoft.com. And remember, I use that same setting in both tiers. And I'm not prompted for it twice or three times. I give the value one time, and we'll do the substitutions all the places in the model. So if I needed to use a configurable service setting in a connection string, some other config file, some other parameter to a script, when I did that install SAB-CMD, you can also specify parameters to your scripts as configurable service settings to get end user input. And I only ask them for it one time, and I can use it in any number of places throughout the model. So I give it the domain. The domain join account, again, is a run-as account. Now, you'll see I don't have the option here to choose a configurable service setting because here I need to populate the actual value. So the UI is smart enough to not give me that option. And I'm going to say, well, this is my domain join account here. And again, this could be an account that I have access to within VMM, but I don't actually know the credentials. I can't get the username. I can't get the password. But it's been authorized for me to use that account to join my machine to the domain. Local admin account, I have my own, so I'm going to use that. I could create one here on the fly if I needed to. And then finally, that SQL user and password that are going to be used as parameters to that script that I'm setting up. So this one, it doesn't matter. And now that all those have been filled in, I can go ahead and deploy my service. So hopefully what you saw was creating a service template can be as simple as a single VM with some roles and features, and maybe one script that does, you know, a basic IIS configuration to all of your servers. Or it could be two-tier, three-tier, include a bunch of applications. But you should think about VM templates in VMM 2012 as building blocks and not as deployable objects. And the reason for that is, one, you can't take advantage of any of the rich in-guest configuration that we do for services with a standalone VM. But two, and probably more important, once you've deployed a VM instance from a VM template, you can never retrofit that instance to be part of a service. So even if you're not taking advantage of any in-guest configuration features right at the beginning, if you ever think you may want to take that instance and then use a template to actually enable some roles and features or execute some script against that instance at some point in time, you have to make sure that you're deploying those instances from a service template. And again, if you've taken the trouble to create the VM template, to get it in the service template is drag and click deploy. So it's one additional operation, and that's literally drag it onto the canvas and click deploy or just click save, right? And you're done. Nothing else special has to be done to take those VM templates and wrap them inside of a service template. So I'm going to switch back to the deck. No, I don't think we have a lot more. So customized deployment, that's actually what we just went through. So we clicked that configure deployment button, and you saw that I got asked for the values of configurable service settings, what you didn't see, and I'll go back and show you again in just a moment, I could have changed the computer name. So if I didn't like the computer name that VMM generated for me, I could change that. And wherever I've modeled those configurable server settings, again, allows me to specialize that deployment per the environment requirements or per my requirements. Specify any application settings. We do have 10 minutes, so I'll show you what that looks like. And again, the whole trick for configurable server settings is it allows you to maintain that single recipe for a particular type of service you're deploying and get that thing deployed the same way every time in multiple environments, only specializing what's important to be specialized for that target environment. You saw this live. This one was actually being deployed to a private cloud. So the one thing you'll notice here is in my configured deployment, because I deployed to a host group and because I was an admin, I actually saw the hosts that those VMs got placed to. As an SSU, we abstract all the fabric away from self-service users. They can only target private clouds, and you'll notice that they do not see hosts or host groups. And even when VMs are placed, all they're going to get is a thumbs up or thumbs down. Now, they'll still get sensible error messages from placement if some requirement couldn't be satisfied, but they don't actually see hosts, and nor do they get to choose which host those VMs go to. The placement engine takes care of that for them. You saw the settings, and then again, single click to deploy. So I'm going to switch back. I'm going to cancel this for a moment. Let's say I went through and I configured all these settings and I was ready to deploy, and turns out that actually I'm not supposed to deploy now. I have a maintenance window coming up in an hour, and that's when my change management request was approved to happen, so I can't do this deployment for an hour. Well, I don't want to come back and have to re-enter in all these settings. So when I cancel out of this deploy service, I'm given the opportunity to save or delete what we've created behind the scenes, which we call a service deployment configuration. Now, that's going to store all the information that I've specialized here for this particular deployment. So I'll go ahead and save it. And again, we're now storing all the info about where these machines were placed, what were the values of the settings that were provided. And in my VMM library, you'll see I now have this service deployment configuration. So if I had to come back an hour later and now deploy this service, I just get to right-click this guy, click Configure Deployment, and all my settings are still saved for me. Or I could just delete this one if I wanted to come back and redo the deployment from scratch. The other thing I wanted to show you real quick is I'm going to take that same service template, and I'm going to copy it. So this is going to come up, and I'm going to open this in the designer. Now, you saw that I could use that one configurable service setting like domain or local admin account in multiple places in the model. Where that really becomes useful, though, is in the case of applications, especially when they have dependencies between tiers. And what I mean by that is I'm going to go ahead and add a different version of this Blog Engine application. Actually, I can do it with this one. So this one has a connection string, right? Server app V picked this up. If this is a web deploy package, this could be a parameter that points to the web config file that has the connection string. But my connection string, what I want to do is say, well, the server, I need the end user to tell me that at deployment time, right? And the user ID, if you remember, in my SQL script that I'm executing, I passed in two parameters, one that was called SQL user, one that was called SQL password. And that was to create that user account in SQL and grant it rights to the database. Well, the Blog Engine application has to know those credentials as well so that the connection string works and the front end can actually talk to the back end. So even in the connection string here, I'll use that same configurable service setting of SQL user. And for the password, I'll use the same one of SQL password. And I'm going to save that tier, click OK, and I'm going to reconfigure deployment again here. And now you'll notice I added those variables in another place in the model, completely different tier, completely different application type. I'm still only asked for SQL user and SQL password one time. So that user is going to give me those credentials, and we're going to use it not only as parameters to that T-SQL script, but also as parameters to that virtual application, that server at V package, so that we know there's no way that I specified the SQL server and the SQL user and SQL password in the script, and then fat fingered it in the connection string so that when I deploy it doesn't work. I get the values one time, and again, I can use them multiple places throughout the model. Again, this takes a little while to deploy, but I do have one that was very similar to this template that's already been deployed. I think I have it stopped, but I can still show it to you. So here I called it a distributed probe log. It has a data tier. It has a server tier. In the data tier, that one stopped. So let me show you a different one. I'm going to do this just to refresh that service instance real quick. So I'm just going to cancel out of that. Now, what's really interesting in the VMM UI, this is why I wanted to refresh that instance, is when you deploy a service, if you've deployed applications such as data tier apps, web deploy, or server app V, we'll not only show you the VMs that are part of that service in that tier, but we'll also show you the apps that have been deployed by us inside of that. And what's more important is we'll show you the specialized settings. So in this case, you can see, remember that data source that I just described, I modeled three configurable service settings in there, one for the SQL server, one for the SQL user, and one for the SQL password. And if I look at this version of Blog Engine, I have this specialized connection string that's been deployed because I took those values at deployment time. If I deployed a second instance of that with different values, we'd show you the values on that instance. And that really helps in troubleshooting scenarios, right? Really easy to go ahead and look at here for, say, a connection string or some other property as opposed to logging into the machine, finding the right web config and finding the right setting. And especially if you had three or four machines, really easy to compare those settings inside the VMM UI. You could even get them from the CLI if you wanted to do a quick comparison to see maybe someone modified one out of band, and that's why one out of every four users is actually hitting an error. So there's a bunch of track resources, and actually what I'm going to do is switch back to this machine one more time. And I'm going to show you a series of related sessions. I didn't get a chance to add it to the official deck. Some of these sessions have already taken place. My understanding is the recorded sessions will be up very shortly, 24, 48 hours or so. Series of VMM sessions here, series of Windows Server sessions. So if you didn't get a chance to see these in person, certainly check them out on the recordings. The follow-up to this one is going to be Friday at 10 or 10:15. That is MGT 317. And in that talk, we're going to go really through the service lifecycle management. So I'll show you how to copy a service template, make changes to that copy, and apply that out to existing service instances. And I'll also show you how app hosts work. And we made a number of really core enhancements in SP1 to the way our in-guest agent works. And we're going to cover all of that on Friday. So if you're still interested in services, which I hope you are, hopefully you can catch that session Friday, or if you have a conflict, certainly watch the video afterwards. Happy to stick around and answer any more questions. And again, thanks very much for coming out.